The last Monday of every month, we've got the one and only James Corbett with us from the Corbett Report. He does fantastic work. Please go check him out and support him. We weren't able to get him last Monday, so a treat for you. The first Monday of the month, April 1st, 2013, my good friend and contributor, James Corbett, joins us on the broadcast today. So much news to talk about today. I woke up and just freaked out. It's unbelievable the amount of news. Welcome to the broadcast, James Corbett.
Well, hey, Jack, instead of playing an April Fool's joke on your audience, perhaps you can bring a fool on to entertain them instead. So here I am.
Ooh. I'm here. A humble, self-deprecating fool at that. People tell me not to do that. You're in the media. You're supposed to have a big ego and tell everybody.
I'm sorry. Yes, of course. Okay, let's get down to business.
Tell them how great you are and they'll believe it. It does work for other people.
I need some intro music or something.
Speaking of which, I want to get into North Korea because there's a rumor going on now that there's going to be surgical strikes on North Korea any second now, which it's just completely foreign to me. I don't understand this concept. I don't understand why North Korea is a threat and you're over there in Japan. So I'd love to get your take on that. But since it's April Fool's today, let's go ahead and start out. As I said, the mainstream media is constantly playing April Fool's jokes on us. And now it has come out, maybe you've seen this, an ex-CNN reporter, at least this is what she's saying, she received orders to manipulate the news to demonize Syria and Iran. Apparently MSNBC and Fox got the same orders. Amber Lyon revealed that during her work for the channel, she received orders to send false news, exclude some others, which the U.S. administration did not favor, with the aim to create public opinion in favor of launching an aggression on Iran and Syria. Ms. Lyon was quoted by the Slovak main news website saying that the mainstream U.S. media outlets intentionally work to create propaganda against Iran to garner public opinion support for a military invasion against it. She revealed that the scenario used before launching the war in Iraq is being prepared to be repeated, where Iran and Syria are now being subject to constant demonization. I guess this isn't much of a surprise, other than why aren't there more people admitting this, James Corbett?
Well, as a matter of fact, not only is it not a surprise, this is actually months and months old. So I'm surprised to see that this got picked up recently. But for people who don't know about Amber Lyon, I hope they will go and check out the reports of hers that got played, for example, on CNN International exactly once before being pulled. And some of her other work that she's been doing in the meantime. And this was something that I highlighted in my podcast back about 6 months ago. Back in October 2012, I had a podcast, How to Manufacture or Suppress Outrage, where I talked exactly about the Amber Lyon and her situation. We played some of the clips that she has of some of the work that she's done. So it's good to see that this is getting a little bit more coverage. But again, nothing new here. And of course, it shouldn't be surprising anyway to anyone who's been paying attention to the lamestream media for the past few decades, at any rate, let alone what the absolute insanity that we've arrived at this particular point in time. But it's always important to expose this type of thing, especially when an insider steps out from behind the shadows to talk about what's going on. So once again, I hope people will take a look at Amber Lyon and her work. She's been doing some very important work and, of course, exposing from behind the scenes what's really going on at CNN.
Why don't we have more people saying this? I guess they're afraid of being blackballed. Unless, I guess the irony is not lost on me that her name is Lyon, but...
Yeah. Well, no, it's a good point because this is obviously so pervasive. I don't think anyone who's in the media for any length of time could possibly fail to see this, to see the outright manipulation that goes on at these networks. But it's a good question. I think there's a lot of different levels and layers of control, both overt and covert, that go on here. And I think it's exactly right. I mean, some people just want to play ball and play nice to try to get the inside coverage or to get the big paycheck or to get their name in big letters or whatever it is. But it amazes me to think of some of the people who are on the inside of this who go along with it, despite fully well knowing what's happening. And it's interesting to me to even see some of the people in the quasi-alternative, people who are kind of halfway there, who aren't really that big anyway when it comes to the mainstream, but still put up with this kind of thing. And I suppose I could name names of certain people who will just put up with any outrage of any administration. But I think everyone can pretty much figure out who some of the big players in that are.
Yeah. you know, I remember going back the night of the inauguration or the night of the election in 2008 when cousin Barry Obama gets in and we're watching the coverage and there's our hero, Rachel Maddow, already pumping up attacks on Pakistan. Something must be done. We got to go get Al-Qaeda now. I mean, literally within seconds.
Yes, now this is the biggest threat to American stability, isn't it? All of these Pakistanis.
The same channel that had been anti-war during 8 years of the Bush administration, it literally in seconds had become war propagandists.
Well, let me tell you one of my particularly galling era through the brain moments. I was watching Keith Olbermann's Countdown back when he was on one of the MSBSC or whatever it's called. And he was doing a countdown on the eight years of the Bush administration in 8 minutes. And it was a blistering, really wonderful summary of all the outrageous abuses of the Bush administration. And I was sitting there all ready to click the like button on YouTube and to register my support of that message. And it ends with him saying something like, "Oh, and there's one answer to all of this, and that's hope," you know, gesturing towards the Obama administration. And it made me throw up in my mouth a little bit. But that was just one of many, many such portrayals to come in that 2008. And I think that's one of the times when I think we all saw that there was nothing behind all of this outrage throughout the Bush administration. Absolutely nothing other than partisan politics. And it is enough to make one want to throw up in their mouth when they realize that all of this outrage was just completely hot air.
Well, Keith Olbermann, the joke was on him as he ended up getting bounced off of several networks and sued, even the Al Gore, Al Jazeera network now. Well, sure, but that is, you know, that's the case that you got to you know where the side of the butter the bagel is on. So, or strike that, reverse it. You know what the incentives are to go along with this. It's just amazing. And you're exactly right. We're not. Those people weren't anti-war, and a lot of them were stroking us. They were working with us during those years, and I wasn't even that shocked to see that they weren't anti-war. They weren't pro-civil liberties or constitutional rights. They were just anti-Republican. So I guess we'll be crossing that bridge again in a few years. The same can be said, obviously, for the Republicans. You can see how they criticize Obama's foreign policy when he's Bush on steroids. He's the top neocon. He should be speaking for all the neocons with the damage he's done and with the wars he's started. And then here we go again. We're on the doorstep of possibly bombing North Korea.
Well, this is a possibility at any rate. And they have been sending out some B-2 bombers to fly over South Korea with nuclear armaments. So they've definitely been raising the stake in all of this over the past week or so. And things continue to come to head as Kim Jong-un continues with his ridiculous rhetoric, really ridiculous propaganda that should be transparent to everyone. But a lot of people are at least taking it seriously enough to make it seem like that boogeyman, which will justify whatever it is they want to justify. And I think on the American-Korean side, we know exactly what it is they're trying to justify here, and that's billions and billions and billions of dollars to the defense contractors, including 14 new ground-based interceptors at Fort Greely, Alaska, by 2017, which is going to cost the U.S. taxpayer $1 billion. But of course, these are the same politicians that are trying to tell you that, oh, without the debt ceiling raise and without the sequestration and all of this, oh, they're not going to be able to make ends meet. They're not going to be able to pay your pension payments or whatever it is that they're holding over your head. But of course, they've always got billions and billions up their sleeve for this type of, you know, non-event.
Right. And they added a bunch of missile defense. I think it was a crazy number, like 19 missile defense bases because of North Korea. But it's not just as simple as when we're talking about North Korea, it's not just as simple as, you know, we want to throw some more cash of your money, your debt over to the military and security industrial complex. There's a wider game being played here. Is that what you're seeing? That this is North Korea is the pawn in the middle of China and the United States? To what degree should we be concerned about a wider war, Oceania versus Eurasia, because Russia is not happy? We've got a number of players in the region, including the Middle East, which is technically a lot of it Eurasia. We're pretty unhappy. So are we heading to something bigger than this, or is this just business as usual, in your opinion, James Corbett?
A little bit of both. And I know that might sound a bit strange, but it is. I think every player in this game has a stake in seeing the status quo continue. So I think that the U.S. and Korea obviously, they don't, I think they don't ultimately mind the saber rattling and the rhetoric from North Korea, because again, there's not much behind this, certainly not from the American perspective. The Koreans have these Taepodong missiles. The 2 and 3 type missiles are supposedly theoretically capable of reaching the western side of the United States mainland, but that's all quite theoretical. And of course, they're wildly inaccurate missiles at best anyway, even if they can get them launched without exploding on the launching pad, which has happened before. So I think, I mean, from that alone, it's a bit of a ridiculous sentiment to believe that there's any sort of threat to the U.S. mainland. And then, of course, the other side of it is that the nuclear threat is a non-existent threat, because again, the North Koreans have not miniaturized their warheads to allow them to put them on a missile. So that, again, that's not a threat, at least at this present time. So there's no imminent looming nuclear cloud here. So I think US and South Korea's interest in this is to see the status quo maintained, where there's this threat that they want to play up into their home audiences. And as I say, that allows them to have that excuse to build up their military capacity as much as possible in the face of that threat. I think China also has a stake in this, in the status quo being maintained, insofar as I think their biggest whole a point in all of this game is to make sure that North Korea doesn't collapse. Because a collapse of North Korea would be a reunification of the Korean Peninsula, which would be, assuming how it would go the way that we all assume it would go, that would mean a Korea with American troops, probably. I mean, they're probably never going to leave the Korean Peninsula at this point, right on the doorstep of China. So at this point, North Korea at least acts as a buffer and is that kind of crazy person that they're keeping as that buffer between them and South Korea and the American forces. And I think that status quo has at least become comfortable enough over the past half century that any sort of upsetting of that would probably be a direct threat to China, with American forces literally right on their doorstep and a little bit too close to home. And so, of course, they're not looking at what's happening right now with this escalation as anything good, because, again, it's bringing the excuse to have B-2 nuclear-armed stealth bombers flying over South Korea, etc. So I think they're quite concerned about all of this as well. So I think they have an investment in seeing this just maintained but not escalated. And I think that's basically what we're seeing at this point. I can't envision this becoming a war unless there's, because of this escalation and everyone's on this knife edge of tension, you never know what can result from a situation like that, with someone making a silly mistake or something bad happening and just igniting something larger. But I don't think anyone really wants this to come to any sort of blow at this point anyway.
You brought up a lot of issues. Hypothetically, because we've done this, if Iran was attacked, what would be their response and what would be the consequences and what would be the blowback? Give us that scenario as best you can anyway, James, with North Korea. If we were to strike them, first of all, would we have the knowledge of available targets, and could we decapitate them with a strike? Secondly, what retaliation might there be, or what kind of blowback, and how would this affect the geopolitical scheme of things?
Well, one of the only semi-realistic specters that they're floating out there these days is the possibility that North Korea might actually attempt some sort of ground invasion of South Korea, which I think is probably about as much as they'd be able to muster. And that is, it is certainly a possibility. And they have discovered, for example, North Korean tunnels that they've dug under the demilitarized zone as potential ways of bringing in troops through the country. And they say there might be others out there that they haven't found yet. So there is, I suppose, at least the possibility that they might start some sort of ground invasion. Of course, that would lead to the utter decimation of North Korea. And I don't think anyone believes for a moment that they wouldn't be pulverized to six ways from Sunday if they actually attempted something.
Right. But suicide. Yeah, it is. Exactly. It would be suicide, which is, you know, okay, so they're crazy. That always is what it comes down to. We heard that from the neocons about the Middle East and different strikes. We've heard that about Iran. They're crazy. Well, they'd just be committing suicide. Yeah, but they're crazy. They'll just commit suicide because they want to go see Allah. I don't think it's that simple. I'm sure people in the West believe that. I look at some of our leaders in the past, and I think, you know, they were pretty crazy.
I suppose that would be easier to maintain. If only Kim Jong-un had a beard and a turban, then I guess this would be a lot easier to pull on the American public. But that makes it that much harder. Yeah. But no, exactly right. The narrative has to be, it always has to be, oh, this person is just a total madman and there's no logic to what they're doing. Whereas I think it's pretty blatant on the North Korean side what's going on here, because every time they do this, every few years, they get the parties back to the table and they get more food aid. They get more money to basically bribe them off. And I think their latest statement saying that they would never give up their nukes, even for billions of U.S. dollars, kind of tips the hand as to what this is really about at the end of the day. Anyway, it is about the negotiation and how much will we pay them to shut up. And I guess that's something that they've counted on time and time again.
Yeah, that's how it's been. And we had the Bush administration, had we rewarded them for this kind of behavior? Be quiet. We're working on several other fronts. We got a lot of irons in the fire here. Just take this money and shut up. And they kind of were, it's Pavlovian, James. They were trained to speak out and then get paid. Though, you know, sanctions certainly hurt the people of North Korea. There's so many issues to this. I guess Austin is safe. We've now figured that out. Austin, Texas is safe. If you saw the headline, they were threatening to nuke Austin. They can't actually do that, folks, unless they're terrorists sneaking over the open borders, in which case I guess anything is possible. We're going to see those missiles coming, the little missiles that they might shoot off, and we can most likely intercept those. So then that would be no real threat. Though Bill Kristol, the neocon from the Weekly Standard, the Trotskyite, says we only have so much time here. No, they can't hurt us now. But this, you know, this is the argument. Same thing with Iran. The clock is ticking. If we don't do something now, we're not, it's going to be too late at some point. And they're not only going to have all these nuclear capabilities that they don't have now, but they'll proliferate those throughout the region into other bad actors.
Yeah, I think we know how this script reads. I think we've all seen this before, and we all know what this doctrine of preemptive strikes is all about. And even though it flies directly in the face of everything that the whole international rule of law that this whole New World Order is supposed to really be about anyway, even though it goes directly in the face of all of those precepts that have been held up ever since, at the very least, the Nuremberg trials and the establishment of the precedent that the aggressive invasion of another country is the ultimate war crime, it doesn't matter. They'll just continue to, you know, bend the rules and make up new ones as they go along, and still continue to claim that as long as we do it, it's right. And that's basically the precedent that's been set, and it was set with the Iraq War. And from now on, I guess they could just continue to bomb whoever they think is in the future maybe going to be a threat to them one day. And that's good enough for the international community, quote unquote.
I want to, before we get done with North Korea, if you're listening to people like my friend James Corbett, or you've been listening to this show, or the people that we generally have on, you shouldn't be very scared about North Korea, though I have seen some pretty reasonable people demonizing them, and then some unreasonable people that we know, again, not mentioning any names in the alternative media, jumping on this bandwagon and yelling to bomb North Korea. These are people that have generally been anti-war or have seen through the smokescreen of false flag terrorism and excuses to go to war. Now, all of a sudden, I guess they see the reward. We're back to what the mainstream media does now, James. They see the reward in you know, jumping on the bandwagon here to bomb or to use some military against North Korea. It surprises me, though. It as I was talking to Scott Horton last week, we can't even believe that people are buying into this. It does seem that people are buying into it. Why is this different than Libya, than Syria, than Iran, and all the other interventions that people haven't been buying all these years? Can you figure that one out? Are you understanding my question?
Yeah, I think I am. Well, it's certainly the old false dialectic, and it's always appealing when they put it out in front of you. It's they show you a terrible regime that does terrible things to its people, and I don't think that there's much doubt that North Korea is not the paradise wonderland that it would like to portray itself to be. I mean, there are real human beings who really do starve to death and live in squalid conditions and are forced to do ridiculous displays of grieving for Kim Jong-il and all of that kind of ridiculousness. I mean, it's easy to parody all of that, and it's easy to look at that and think, well, we do need to do something about it. What will they do about it? And it's difficult to think of how to oppose a regime like that without just the easy, well, let's just drop bombs on them till they go away type of answer. And again, I mean, until we as a species start to think of better ways to resolve problems like this than just dropping bombs on the people we're supposedly saving, then I think we are probably lost as a species.
In other words, it seems okay if you're non-war, non-intervention guys, it seems okay to go ahead and make an exception for North Korea, which I mean, one shoe fits all for me, James. It's the same reason I don't want to attack North Africa, the same reason I don't want to go out and attack and do military maneuvers on any sovereign country is the same reason I wouldn't want to do it on North Korea because of the blowback, because of the innocents that will die, because it's completely unnecessary, because we can't afford it. I mean, it's just such a long list, but yet people again seem to be making this exception for North Korea is if they're buying into it or they feel that there'll be a certain amount of a reward. How much of all of this, the recent war games that are, they seem to be a little more powerful. There's more of them than we've seen in the past, the South Korea and United States war games against North Korea. How much of all of this, in a sense, making them part of the American Union? And we've got Canada, we added, I think, Panama, Colombia was added. CAFTA under threat was expanded from NAFTA. The FTAA, we're seeing all these moves with the new Pope coming from Argentina, Hugo Chavez dying, a lot of instability in Central and South America to push that through. And meanwhile, last year, just, I don't even seem to notice South Korea have just joined our trade pact here. How much of that has to do with all of this, if anything?
Well, if it's not the major consideration, it's still a pretty large consideration in all of this. And I think we've seen over the last couple of years how the escalating tension in the East China Sea and the South China Sea is leading to a type of coalition of partners who wouldn't even necessarily have that much in common or would have competing interests, who find themselves being thrown together because of this kind of what's being set up, this rivalry between the U.S. proxies and China. And I think that we're starting to see this, for example, we're starting to see calls for ASEAN to step up and become more of a political union that might be able to counterbalance China, etc. And it does provide that convenient justification for why these countries should get on board with the globalization agenda and start to form more of a regional force. Because how else are they going to, you know, stand up to China? Otherwise, they'll just be overrun by this new elephant in the room that's been created, of course, by the American capitalists, the crony capitalists at the very top, who, of course, have been, you know, obviously offshoring the wealth of America to China in a completely self-conscious effort for the past couple of decades.
Yeah. The global economic trickery and warfare going on here is mind-boggling. I don't think a lot of Americans can even come close to understanding this kind of a game, let alone believing it. But for instance, going into Iraq, as Greg Palast has confirmed and others, to keep the oil in the ground, to be able to more tightly control the global oil prices, and then eventually taking it back out of the ground and then selling it to China, who we were trying to stop from getting it in the first place. You know, I mean, it's the stuff that the trade imbalance, the manipulations of currency, all of this that goes along with it, and then war, it is mind-boggling. You know, speaking of money and war, the total Iraq price tag over $4 trillion now. I think we were a little upset when we thought it was going to cost $1 trillion. Generally, the powers that be never put it over $1 trillion. It's usually under, but this is a new study out. The wars are over, but I always think that's funny. The wars are over. April Fools. The spending is just beginning, says the new study. The U.S. wars in Iraq and Afghanistan have been declared officially over, but America has barely begun to pay the bill, says a new study. The Iraq and Afghanistan wars will together cost $4 to $6 trillion, according to a new study from Harvard University's Kennedy School. A large share of those bills have yet to be paid. That study finds the U.S. has spent already around $2 trillion thus far on the two controversial wars. And, well, I guess that would be, what, James? We're looking at about a third of our national debt right now, at least the debt they're telling us about. So that sucks.
Right. About a fourth, actually. But who's counting? I think after a certain number of trillions, we all give up. But I hope people understand that there is a psychological kind of operation factor to this, that this is often how the way that these kinds of big numbers are reported to the public. First, they'll give a lowball estimate, and that will become kind of the norm. And that's what everyone says over and over. And that gets repeated enough that it just becomes the conventional wisdom. And then it doesn't matter later on whether, you know, some actual research comes out to show that the number is much higher, because by that point, the lower mark is set in the public's mind. So I'm sure everyone will continue to use the $1 trillion number, despite whatever research comes out at this point, in the exact same way that people still quote whatever the official number of Iraqi dead supposedly is, although they never, of course, actually kept count. But I'm sure the official number is in the tens of thousands, when, of course, we've had studies saying over 1 million Iraqis have died. But you know, again, it's just one of those things that they'll report on the low number, and then when the real number comes out later on, no one will even pay attention.
Or mutilated, or deformed, or lives completely ruined. You know, these are all things that I guess there should be statistics on, though I think we've heard quotes on that in the past. I don't know if the New World Order cares too much about all of this. In the end, they need to save the rest of us, James. That's why they do this. All right, James Corbett is with us. We got to take a quick break, James. That is James Corbett from CorbettReport.com, where you can check out his podcast and all of his wonderful work. If you haven't, I don't know, people in my world, I'm sure, have all heard of you, James, but if not, they're really missing out. Perfect, great work that you do over there. When we come back, let's talk about this. I thought this might have been an April Fool's Day joke, but then I noticed it was the London Guardian. This is essentially the mainstream media. Confirmed. The underwear bomber was work for the CIA all along. It's out now, James. So, not that we didn't already know that, but then again, it's nice that the rest of the world can know it too. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Jack Blood Show, April 1st, 2013. We'll be right back with more of James Corbett. Thanks to all of you supporters. Yeah, we don't have commercials during this show. It's because you guys have been supporting us, allegedly, kind of. We are still way behind for last month and in a major hole because of medical bills, just bad timing. Please support this show. We need it now more than ever. Jackblood@hotmail.com. Also support my friend James Corbett. You got to vote with your dollars. Otherwise, these things can go away. You never know what you've got till it's gone. I've seen several great radio stations just go away within a very short amount of time, and no one expected it. And then they say, well, what could we have done? Well, we told you the whole time. You got to support the things that you're getting something out of. And the CorbettReport.com is certainly one of those. There's no the in it, by the way. It's just CorbettReport.com, open source intelligence news, the publisher with us on the broadcast once a month. He's James Corbett. Thanks again for being with us, James.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
Speaking of April Fool's Day, this is the 10th anniversary today of the Jessica Lynch being rescued from the hospital in Iraq, where she, well, we know what happened there. She had been held prisoner. The entire thing was a setup, and she later said so much that she had lied about this heroic rescue that was meant to drum up more support for the war in Iraq. But April Fool's Day, Jessica Lynch rescued 10 years ago today. I guess that was good timing.
I never knew that was April 1st, but that does make a lot of sense now that you say it.
Well, it's also Terry Nichols' birthday today. He was, of course, convicted as an accomplice in the Oklahoma City bombing case. He was born this day in 1955. I guess that was we were all fooled with that one, considering the fact that he likely had little to nothing to do with the Oklahoma City bombing, James, in your opinion?
Well, I wouldn't say quite that much, but he, there's certainly a lot more. And it's interesting that they won't let him talk to the media about what he knows, or at least what he says he knows anymore. And he's quite firmly ensconced in the jail system there, and they won't let him talk to anyone because I hope people will take a look at some of the things that he said while he's in prison and that have been smuggled out of there by people who've been trying to get the word out about what he's talked about. But yeah, basically there was a lot more going on to it. And he has said that he believed that that McVeigh was working for the U.S. Special Forces.
And that he may or may. Well, I know they tried to arrest his brother, Nichols' brother, who did absolutely have nothing to do with all of this. And they almost framed him. If he wasn't smart as he was and didn't have as many resources and as much backing as he had, he'd be in jail for the rest of his life as well. So that ties into a couple of other stories, James. You mentioned Al-Qaeda earlier, the Al-Qaeda beards. That's what James Holmes is sporting now, the alleged shooter in Aurora, Colorado. The Obama administration tried desperately last week to surround themselves with Sandy Hook Elementary School, Newtown, Connecticut victims, telling us shame on us if we've forgotten this. They drudged up some phony warrants and some new connections in the Sandy Hook case in order to outrage people again. This implicated directly the NRA as some kind of a motivator for this. If you remember last week, they had the redacted search warrant, which did get reported and was in the news. They've got that Bushmaster AR-15 back in the school, starts in the school, goes into the trunk of the car, goes now back in the school, despite the fact that every news network had already reported there were no semi-automatic weapons or rifles used in the Sandy Hook Elementary School. So we had all of that. And then just to remind us again, as they're trying to ram through all this new gun legislation in the United States, they're on their way to Colorado to surround themselves with victims from the Aurora, Colorado theater shooting in James Holmes, who has basically, I guess, decided to take a plea deal at this point. That'll tie into our next story. Any comments on any of this, James?
Well, I haven't been following the ins and outs of these stories, but I think we all know where the overall narrative is heading, and it's always a question of the tyrants campaigning on the bodies of their own victims and trying to make themselves look like the heroes, and we see that time and again, and it's unfortunately a tried and tested and true model for how they tend to take these power grabs and get the power.
James Holmes, if he's going to plead guilty, he's obviously getting life in prison in solitary confinement forever, thrown down a hole. I'm not sure if you've gone to all the trouble to do all of this, why you wouldn't want to speak up in court, why you wouldn't want to drag this out as long as possible, why you wouldn't claim some excuse for this, whether it be reasons of insanity or you were innocent. You were mind controlled and put at the scene of the crime. I think people, considering the evidence, might even believe something like that. But no, he's just going to plead, allegedly. This is what we're hearing. He's just going to plead guilty and be spared the death penalty. This is exactly what Alamatov, the underpants bomber, did. And it was surprising. And Kurt Haskell, who we both know, was there in the courtroom ready to tell what he knew of the conspiracy, the wider conspiracy involved in the Christmas Day underwear bombing, which is the excuse for almost all the invasive searches we go through at the airport now, that and the other Richard Reed event. And you wonder why, you know, people would plead guilty just to be thrown down a hole and never seen again. This particular guy, Alamatov, was put in some Idaho prison. I keep forgetting the actual place, but he's put like 19 floors underground. Can't see anyone, right? Well, this came out, I think it was today. Underwear bomber was working for the CIA. Bomber involved in plot to attack U.S.-bound jet was working as an informer with Saudi intelligence and the CIA. It has emerged, according to the London Guardian. The would-be underwear bomber involved in the plot to attack U.S.-based jet was, in fact, working as an undercover informer with Saudi intelligence and the CIA. It has emerged. The revelation is the latest twist in an incredibly bizarre story about the disruption of an apparent attempt by Al-Qaeda to strike high-profile American targets. How do you explain this one away? He went rogue. He was a double agent. That we should be blaming Saudi Arabia for this, or Saudi Arabia infiltrating Al-Qaeda. I mean, how do you spin this so that it doesn't sound like a complete false flag terror attack?
Well, I can tell you exactly how. Actually, it's interesting that this story got picked up on a number of alternative media sites in the last couple of days, but it actually dates back to May of 2012, so it's almost 1 year old now. And this comes not from the original underwear bomber incident from 2009. This is from a different incident that was supposedly taking place for the 1 year anniversary of the quote unquote killing of Osama bin Laden. And there was supposedly some strikes that had been set up for U.S. bound aircraft around that time. And apparently this all got thwarted by the convenient insertion of a double agent supposedly working with the CIA who was involved with the AQAP, the Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula. So this got widely reported on at the time. It's in CBS, it's in the Seattle Times, it's on the New York Sun. I mean, every possible place you could find it, the New York Daily News or whatever it's called. If you go and read through the story, basically what this is they're trying to say that they because they had this agent on the inside of this scheme who was entrusted with one of these bombs, which was a similar type to the bomb that the underwear bomber used back in 2009, because he was entrusted with this, then he turned it into the, to I think, the Saudi intelligence, and then they handed it over to the CIA, and he was being debriefed at the time. And it's interesting, I've gone through story after story after story on this since it's come back up again in the last couple of days, and I can't find the actual name of the intelligence agent. I guess they're just not giving it out. But it wasn't Abdulmutallab. This is some other lackey that they've put in. And the spin on it is that they managed to break the case because of this. If it hadn't been for this agent, then it might have ended up in the plane being bombed. But I don't think it's very hard to go from this to seeing how...
But wait a minute, the agent... I understand that. The agent didn't stop him from bombing the plane. The passengers did, right? I mean, the guy had the bomb, allegedly. It was a fake bomb. Is that what we're saying? That they went in and they put in a fake bomb in place of the real bomb?
No. We're talking about a different person and a different incident. So this is not Abdulmutallab they're talking about, this underwear bomber who worked for the CIA. This is a different guy.
It's a different underwear bomber.
Yeah, a guy who didn't end up doing it. And this is supposedly someone who was working as a double agent, and he got the bomb and then handed it over to the authorities. And because of that, they went in and did some drone strikes and killed some people in Yemen. And that's the official story on this one anyway. So this is a completely different incident. But again, it shows that exactly how this is done, and it shows that some of these bombers are actually protected assets, exactly as has been alleged with Abdulmutallab. So and in fact, it has been talked about openly by Patrick Kennedy, the Undersecretary of State, etc., in open testimony. So I don't think we have to go out on a limb to say that Abdulmutallab was likely in a similar situation to this one that got exposed.
Yeah, we might even have more evidence in the case of the other. I haven't even heard that there was another underwear bomber, so I guess there you go. As informed as I am all the time, I miss stuff constantly. And it's interesting, two of the stories you said were kind of old today all started coming at me for some reason in my inbox this morning. I wonder why that is.
Yeah, I saw it as well. It came up, and when I looked back, it was May 2012, so I had to reacquaint myself with the story. So it is interesting how these stories kind of recirculate from time to time when they get rediscovered.
Yeah, yeah. What, we've got about 15 minutes left, so you want to get into anything that you've been reporting? I love to do that when you have me on your show, is, you know, have a little time to relay all the work that I've been doing, and so that will be in your pocket. Anything you want to mention that you've been working on, then pass along to my listeners?
Well, I mean, there's a lot that's been going on, but something that I think is obviously particularly important has been the Cyprus situation and what it could potentially mean for the rest of the world. And we've heard this being floated, at least temporarily, this has been floated. Oh, this is going to be a new template for the European Union. And of course, the Dutch finance minister who said that had to immediately retract those remarks, because it started the market started taking note of that type of rhetoric. So I think anyway, what happened in Cyprus is extremely important. I think it is going to be more of something that's going to be used as a template, not only in Europe, but other places besides. And there's some new legislation being passed in Canada that apparently is starting to institutionalize this bail-in idea, where you don't bail out the banks, you bail them in by taking the money of their depositors. And this is pretty much exactly what we've been talking about for years, isn't it? I mean, we've been talking about how when and if the Great Reckoning happens, it's going to be a bank holiday. They close down the banks for a week, and they sort things out in some deal behind the scenes. And when the banks open, you get X number of dollars where you had X plus Y number of dollars before. And that's exactly how this works. And a lot of this has been painted as if this is some sort of thing to go after Russian, you know, gangsters or whatever. But of course, it has hit everyone equally, everyone who was in there, including Cypriot businesses. And interestingly enough, on some Bitcoin forum, someone posted a screenshot of their bank account. It was a Cypriot IT firm that had several hundred thousand euros in the bank. And now they have about 100,000 euros in the bank. So they've been completely wiped out as a business, basically, because of this bail-in. And it just goes to show that this is having some real consequences for Cyprus and potentially for the rest of the world, as this becomes some sort of template for them to use.
Setting a template, a precedent, a prototype. prototype to snatch everybody's 401ks, their money, and if they can't just keep working the bubble and massaging the bubble open to close as they've been doing for the last 100 plus years. Is there, but it cost benefit analysis, they could be crippling Russia on the one hand and setting this precedent on the other. So both could be true in this case. We had heard about a lot of extensive oil being found in the region as well, which people seem to be fighting over. Any news on your end on that?
No, actually, I was just seeing that on your site, though, and I'm glad that you're covering that because it's an interesting part of this puzzle. I think there is a lot going on here, and one part of it could potentially be aimed at Russia, but even that, I think, is a bit of a smokescreen because when you look at it, the Bank of Cyprus and Laiki Bank had correspondent banks in London that did not put withdrawal limits or controls on withdrawals through London. So there is every indication that during that week that the banks were closed in Cyprus, the big Russian depositors and others who had big mega money in those accounts got them all out through the back door anyway.
Well, of course. Yeah, the right people always know ahead of time what's going on. I mean, there is, I believe there's a Goldman Sachs in... There's definitely an M. Rothschild office in Moscow or in Russia. So, yeah, I mean, they're going to know. They're going to have inside information just like everybody does around the world. But it does. I think what the article was saying, James, that you're looking at that's on my website is, and this kind of gets back to Libya a little bit, is one of the reasons we had to go into Libya. One of the reasons that whole thing went down, besides stealing, you know, $50 billion from Gaddafi and getting more control, was the oil flowing to Europe. And that's why I think a lot of Americans were saying, well, why do we have to do this? We're not getting this oil. This is European oil. And then they talk about the economic domino theory here. But we've heard this about Cyprus as well, and the oil that is in the region discovered allegedly by Israelis and Americans, that if they can get that oil and keep it away from Russia, then they don't have to be kowtowed by Russia anymore. They don't have to be at the mercy of Russian oil or gas or oil prices, for that matter, and it frees them. So Libya did that, and potentially this could do that, and getting isolating Russia a little bit more, as again we're talking about Oceania always at war with Eurasia, it certainly would have implications further down the road to create that double government, one side versus the other, that has been often predicted.
It is so important for people to understand the types of pipeline politics that are going on here in the energy resource wars. And this is why I think Central Asia is such an important place to keep our eye on, with all of that grab for land and war over pipelines that are going on there. But I think there's a couple of other places people really need to keep their eye on. And one of them is Pakistan. There's a pipeline that involves the port of Gwadar, which is in the southwest of Pakistan, which also it happens to be an area that just happens to have an ethnic uprising, which is being supported by various members of American Congress. They're all on the sides of this ethnic group in Pakistan. And the only thing that plays into this is the fact that there's basically a resource war going on with China, trying to get more of its finger in the pie there. And so suddenly we have American congressmen all concerned about these ethnic Pakistan militants. And another place to keep people's eye on, I just covered this in a video that just went up on my site just a few hours ago, is a Trans-Myanmar gas pipeline that's just been constructed, connecting basically cutting straight across Myanmar, aka Burma, right into the China. And it's interesting, again, when you look at that pipeline and you look at some of the recent flare-ups and violence in Myanmar, there's some violence that has been traced back to some of the Aung San Suu Kyi faction of monks in the western side of the country. That is exactly where the beginning of the pipeline is. And then on the northeastern side of the country, where it leads into the Chinese region, is exactly where there's been some other uprisings that the government has been attempting to put down with guns and fighter jets. So It is absolutely, I mean, transparent there what's going on when you trace the violence against the pipeline. It's exactly following that route. And it happens so often that it's, I mean, it's so obvious to people who are looking at the pipelines, but so few people, I think, have their eyes on these various pipelines or understand exactly how important this is to the global geopolitical game. So I hope people will take a look at that. And that's why I think it's important for people to also take a look at that article you have up about Cyprus. And just for those who don't know, it's on deadlinelive.info. Is the EU banking crisis in Cyprus employed to get oil rights?
Read Jim Norman's book, The Oil Card. He worked in the exchange energy industries for years and years and knows where the bodies are buried. And that kind of goes along well with Confessions of an Economic Hitman. Those two books together will change your paradigms. It'll change your oil, folks, and your water. But the point you made about the mega rich, you know, the elites taking out their money before the looting, before a lot of the things, the other shoe dropped in Cyprus, I think is the one that's most important here, that people did know ahead of time. It does show that this thing was as manufactured as our sequester crisis here in the United States.
It's so easy to get caught up in these stories and to just follow them instead of looking at who knew about them in advance and how it was set up. So again, you know, with the North Korean crisis or whatever it is, whatever crisis they're trying to hype up, it's important to look at how this has been pre-arranged and pre-engineered. And there's so much pre-existing infrastructure to all these stories that if we don't keep our eyes on that and keep that in mind, then we might get caught up in just following wherever these stories lead. And of course, that's exactly what they want us to do.
Qui bono, that is, whenever you see something happen that is has the implications and the ripple effects of these world events, ask yourself who benefits. I go the whole way. I'm playing Columbo, right? So that's why I play dumb, James. It's to trick people into confessing or whatnot. No, but you have motive, you have opportunity, and you benefit it. It's kind of like 9/11. That's why the court of public opinion is constantly going in favor of, we were completely lied to about that. Now we're tired about giving up our rights. And we are seeing on the positive front some major advances coming through. And I'm going to be talking about those, folks, again, to plug my event here in Atlanta, Georgia, next Saturday on the 6th of April at Center Stage in Atlanta. I'm going to be talking about that somewhat. So what do you think about the possibility of Caroline Kennedy becoming the ambassador to Japan? Obviously, she's been kind of outspoken against the Obama administration. There has been some leaks coming from her camp that she didn't feel that they treated her right, that they kind of used her, that they're arrogant assholes, that she doesn't like any comparisons between her father, John F. Kennedy, and cousin Barry Obama. But could this be maybe a way to keep her quiet, to make her happy? Would she even accept that? And how would the people of Japan like the Camelot coming to Japan?
I'm going to confess total ignorance and on this matter. I haven't been following this at all. And to be honest, I don't even know exactly where Caroline fits into the Kennedy family, which I don't mean to upset Americans and their royal family, but I haven't been following this in the least, so I don't really know how to comment on that. But that's
she's married to a very rich Jewish banker guy. Is the deal. And I mean, I'm not saying, look, because she did speak out against Obama. I'm just mentioning it to you, James. I don't know much about it either. I just saw it come across the wire this morning and I thought it'd be interesting to get your take on it. Does it matter? Do people even know who their ambassadors are?
I would guess not. I'm actually following the U.S. ambassador to Japan on Twitter, but I'm imagining pretty much 99.9% of the population wouldn't even know him if they saw him on the street.
What, how long are you there forever, James, in Japan? I mean, are you ever coming back here to your home country? Are you that happy over there? And is there anything we need to know? Because you don't hear much about Japan anymore, and they're really caught in the middle of everything over there. They're ramping up their military again, which some people would be concerned about. There have been several power vacuums performed in just the last couple of years. I mean, and then Fukushima on top of that. So give us
exactly right. I like to think of it as sitting on the front lines of the economic collapse, because I think whatever's going to happen is going to hit the yen first. And that's not particularly pleasant to think about. But no, I'm probably not coming back to Canada at any time in the foreseeable future anyway. I'm about to have our first child, and I think we're ready to settle in here. So I'm going to be your frontline reporter for whatever's happening.
Well, pave the way for me, because I might have to come over there and join you.
There you go. Yeah.
The opportunities here aren't so much. Let me get into this with you. One of the predictions we made last year was that there'd be a huge pandemic scare, maybe not the real thing. I still think that shoe's going to drop. That's certainly one of the tricks that the New World Order has up their sleeve. We've been seeing all these asteroids lately. I had an interesting discussion with my friend Freeman about how these asteroids could be some kind of a military application, which is something I was a little suspicious of right away, because it gives you that plausible deniability that you need when you want to attack other countries and not be blamed for it. Better than a false flag. But the pandemic thing, I don't know if you've been seeing all of the news coming out, and today there's even more. Scientists warning of a more dangerous kind of a SARS, saying that if the virus mutates further, which is exactly what they're doing with it in labs all over America, all over the world, it could cause a deadly pandemic. It's a H7N9, and the first few deaths in Shanghai, in China, of course, have been recorded, though that could have been anything. And then to go along with all of this, we've got missing vials of viruses from laboratories in Texas. So what are you seeing here? Would this happen? Could this happen? And what do you see behind all of this? Is this just more fear-mongering to control us, or is there something to any of this?
Well, when looking at the reporting that's coming out about this new bird flu, I mean, my tendency is to try to laugh it off. Ooh, H7N9, are you afraid? You should get very afraid. But unfortunately, exactly as you indicate, I mean, this is part of the long-term game plan, and I think something that they have kept on the back burner for a long time and will continue to do so until, I think, such time as it suits them to bring it to the front burner. And that's, I mean, what we have to be concerned about, because unfortunately, as exactly as you say, I mean, the 1918 influenza and all of that has been dug up from the permafrost in Alaska and used as an experiment by the U.S. military, and we're supposed to, I guess, be happy about that and, oh, well, at least it's the good guys who are using it, or whatever it is that we're supposed to believe about that propaganda. And unfortunately, we know that the biological weapons programs continue in the United States and everywhere else under the guise of defense, even though, of course, it's been outlawed to develop weapons. But of course, under the guise of defense, you can still develop weapons and just say that you're developing it, the technology, for defensive purposes. So it continues along, and this is one of those big X factor wild cards that unfortunately we don't have a lot of information on. And until it starts sweeping across the globe, I mean, there's not a lot that that people can even do to prepare for it. So this is one of those things that they have up their sleeve. Yeah.
I disagree, in the sense that you can at least make sure your immune system is tough, right? That it's not just so base that the mildest little Kissinger flu might take you out. Because one of the things they could do, because people are eating so terribly, James, because they don't take care of themselves, because the air, food, and water is all toxic and poison, because we are more stressed than ever before, because we have to work longer than ever before, and there's more pressure, and therefore we're just not in good shape, that a very mild virus, if you want to call it that. I hate that term, but that could hurt a lot of people. That could really mess a lot of people up. So there is something you can do regarding that. And then you can defend your mind by not falling for this. I got in a lot of trouble, was it 10 years ago? I'm on the radio saying, look, and that's when the SARS first came out in Toronto. People were being quarantined, and you know, we got on a big station and we're telling people that it was fake, that there would be nothing to worry about. And I was, you know, called a conspiracy theorist and a propagandist from the other channels up in Rhode Island. And it turned out I was right. I never got an apology for that.
Yeah, funny how that works. Well, let me put it this way. I think you're right that we can be better prepared for this type of thing, and our health should ultimately be our own responsibility. But as long as people are wired into the industrial food matrix, I think that they don't know what they're eating, and they don't know what's being put into them, what types of GMOs or whatever it is. So unless people are truly making an effort to get off of that and to buy as much as they can from people they actually know, from places they can actually see the food growing, until people start to get out of this mindset that everything that you eat comes from a supermarket, I don't think they're going to be able to protect themselves fully, because, again, you just don't know what you're putting in your body.
Well, that's one of the stories I'm going to have in the second hour. A Kansas couple, I don't know if you saw this story, who happened to be ex-CIA, raided. They were gardening inside. They were doing a little permaculture inside with lights and stuff, and they ended up getting raided in a pot raid. So even the CIA isn't safe at this point. But definitely we are moving in the right direction for that. And I think, you know, again, watch your immune systems, because people always ask, James, why would these elites poison us all? Wouldn't they be poisoning themselves if they eat macrobiotic food and they take really good care of themselves, right? And they have access to top medical life extension therapy, all of the rest of it, and immune system therapy that we probably don't even know about, then they're not worried about it. They can pick and choose exactly who's going to live and who's going to die, and the low-level slaves are going to be the first ones to go. I think this starts in China because we can watch how a totalitarian government such as that can control a virus through these forced quarantines by not having to worry about things like the pesky constitution, etc.
I think you're exactly right. It's a good example to show the people through the mainstream media, this is what we need to do, and it's a good way to prepare people for it. So unfortunately, I think that is part of the calculus as well.
I love the CorbettReport.com. It is Corbett, no the, Corbett, two T's, report.com. If you just do a search for James Corbett, you'll find all of his great work, whether it's on YouTube or on his own website, Open Source Intelligence News. You've been doing a lot of work on money. In fact, I did something kind of similar to you. We did talk about regional currency. I think you did something on that recently, didn't you? I remember hearing it.
I did community currencies. I just talked to Paul Glover, who started Ithaca Hours back in 1991, that so far has traded millions of dollars in Ithaca, New York. And I've also talked to Wayne Walton recently, who I believe you might have had on your program recently.
We did. He's actually doing the show with us here. He's coming to Atlanta to do that show. That Hours currency. It's very interesting, though. I have a lot of questions whenever we talk about currency that involves a certain amount of faith. But I love the alternatives. And it's neat that we're constantly looking for these alternatives. It's great that, as I mentioned, we're on the move for permaculture. Box stores are being constantly banned in new areas everywhere. It looks like the people are beginning to catch on a little bit, James. I hope it's in time.
Well, this is the good thing about living in bad times, is at the very least, people are starting to take their heads out of the ground to at least look around and see what's going on. So hopefully we can grab their attention.
You rock. Corbett Report, and I'm doing your show once a month as well. I always appreciate you having me on. I love talking to you. You're a great guy. Support CorbettReport.com. Folks, we'll be back for the second hour right after this. Thanks, James. Appreciate it.
Thank you.